CliffCentral.com.
Bangers in the system, miss that. Bangers in the system, miss that. System, miss that.
All right, bangers in the system. Well, that's how it goes. All right, very nice. That was Travis Scott and Franchise. That's what you need this morning. All right, it's Tuesday. There's lots to discuss. I've got to tell you quickly that the lotto continues, and you get to play. You get to take part. The Euro Millions draw is standing at 1.3 billion. Rand, and the Super Enna Lotto is offering 1.2 billion Rand. On Wednesday morning, that's tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., the U.S. Mega Millions, which is drawn twice a week, I think, is now standing at 6.2 billion Rand. Did you hear that right? With a B. 6.2 billion Rand. And on Wednesday evening, the German Lotto is now offering a payout of 600 million Rand. On Thursday, the U.S. Powerball is rolled over to 6.8 billion rand, and Lotto Land South Africa is a licensed bookmaker with the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. You can go and buy a ticket for any of those lotteries on lottoland.co.za. They are licensed with the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. No persons under the age of 18 are permitted to gamble. Winners know when to stop. The National Responsible Gambling Toll-Free Counseling Line is 0800-006-008. Very nice. All right. Damn. You know, I was thinking.
Do you want to get into some news?
Yeah. Absolutely. I'll tell you what I was thinking just now. Remind me. It's a good one. But first, the news. Okay. What do you got going on, Sia?
Yeah, there's this story that I feel like we have all forgotten about, which goes back to whatever the heck is going on in China and the fact that we can never really put our finger on it. The journalist who was one of the first people in China to speak very candidly and openly about the coronavirus and its outbreak in Wuhan is still currently sitting confined and is facing further jail time. And I think that is unfair. She was just doing her job.
Yeah, I remember when she came out and said that that the whole thing was developed in a lab in Wuhan and that's where it started. And you know, the Chinese, there's just no... I'm sorry, if you dissent from the party line, then you just get locked up in jail. And that's what's happened to her. And she's even lucky that she's alive because many people were just disappeared, you know? So that's not surprising to me at all. And of course, you know, I was talking to someone yesterday about this. Because there's so much about it that is suspicious. And if you put any links or articles up on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, it flags them immediately as being, you know, potentially fake news. Which is so funny because it's almost like there's this campaign to make China look good. And this is not a country that deserves to be made to look good. I'm afraid it is China's fault that this outbreak was created in the first place, however it was created, whether it was natural or it was laboratory made. It started in China, so China have blood on their hands. And when people say, like Joe Biden was saying in the run-up to the election in America, he's saying Donald Trump has, you know, the deaths of over 200,000 Americans on his conscience. Well, no, actually. I think China does. Because Donald Trump shut down travel from China within days of finding out about this virus. It was back in February that he did that. Now, the Chinese have yet to apologize to the world for what has happened here. The WHO have been praising them nonstop. You know, the big boss at the WHO, what's his name again? He's got a very strange name. He's from Ethiopia. Can't remember it now. For God's sake. Anyway, he was the one who went out within, again, weeks of the outbreak and said, oh, no, thank you very much, China. You've taught us all how to deal with pandemic. You've been so responsible. I mean, really.
Not Dr. Tedros?
Tedros, that's it. Tedros. So he was all, you know, full of praise for China. And if you say, for example, that it took China a long time to admit that there was this problem in the first place and that they kept it secret for a long time, and we probably would never have known until it was much too late. And in many cases, it was too late. Certainly, that was the case for Italy. Perhaps if they'd been honest and upfront with us at the beginning, we would have been able to deal with this collectively in a better way. We would have had less people die. But no one's saying it's China's fault. No, no, no. And if you say that on social media, then you're flagged. You know, they suddenly put up a notice that, oh, no, you can't share information like that. That's fake news. Well,
and that's exactly one of the grounds they're trying to get this. Her name is Zhang Zan. Mm-hmm. She's 37 years old. That's how they're trying to justify why she should be imprisoned longer. So she was arrested 6 months ago.
Sure.
And right now could face up to 5 years behind bars. She's currently being held in a detainment facility in Shanghai, and her charges are spreading false information.
Oh, yeah.
So there were papers that were released yesterday where she was accused of, these are their words, picking quarrels and stirring up trouble, as well as sending false information through text, video, and other media through the internet, such as WeChat, Twitter, and YouTube. And the fact that she was also accepting interviews and doing interviews with media houses outside of China, say that no, she was just being malicious with speculation around Wuhan's COVID-19 epidemic. And so from that point, they are now recommending a 4 to 5 year prison sentence for her.
4 to 5 year prison sentence for doing something that has helped the world to come to grips with this thing, that has not put us back, and it hasn't been fake news. It's all been true by the looks of things.
And to look at the things that she was breaking as well at that time, before her arrest, Zhang was focused on reporting on the number of COVID cases in Wuhan. She already was speaking about being skeptical of the official figures
right.
that the government was releasing. And then she also did an interview around that time speaking about the effect the virus will have on small businesses and how many small businesses were failing, which is not a good thing for that part of the world. She was suggesting that unemployment numbers were higher than acknowledged by the government as well. And sadly, she was one of the first to speak out, but she is one of some of the few who have been arrested. These are journalists who are speaking out in that part of the world. There's a journalist who was detained in Jan as well, while another reporter, her name is Lee, went missing in early Feb, but was found in April and was discovered that they were also detained by authorities. And then another journalist, their name is Fang Bin, went
Fang
missing.
Fang Bin, I know around. Fang Bin. Oh no, they go missing as well. Oh.
Fang Bin went missing around this time last year and has still not been seen since. So, I think we shouldn't forget stories like this because we need to hold certain people to task. How is it that people just doing their job are now going to be thrown into jail, or people are just missing? And how do we just accept that?
Well, again, I've said this a million times, I'm not going to repeat myself, other than to say that I've believed that there are certain groups and certain people that need to be blamed for the way that they've handled this pandemic, and I'm waiting for their comeuppance. I'm waiting, and we'll see what happens, but they have ruined the world. They are China, the media, the experts, governments all around the world, and the fifth group are the medical fraternity, who started off telling us we didn't need masks and then said we did. And it's just been such lying and such bullshit in all of this. I'm furious about it. I really am. And the media, I think the media have the largest slice of the blame. And we spoke to Tim Cully just yesterday, and he said he's also pissed off with the media because they're the ones who've driven up the hype. You know, they're the ones who said, oh, you know, it's terrible. People are dying. And I mean, now you see countries all over the place going into these second lockdowns, and it's just, it's doing nothing. The WHO themselves, who've changed their position more than the Kama Sutra on things like lockdowns, they really have. These guys are now saying, oh, no, well, lockdowns don't do anything. That's straight from the WHO. Lockdowns don't do anything. But politicians are grabbing hold of lockdowns because it makes it look like they're doing something, you know. That's all. Carl says, I love how these Chinese names are so obscure that you don't know what pronouns to use. He's saying they or them because, yes. Yeah, not sure if it's a man or a woman. Be careful.
Yeah, I realize, let me not assume by saying Li is a she, so rather they.
And right.
Fang Bin has been missing for more than a year, wherever Fang is.
Right. Well, Anthony's on the line. He says we've got to be careful because Big Brother is watching and listening. Hey, Anthony? Anthony, can you hear us? Switch on your microphone, Anthony. See if you can come in here. No.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, Anthony. We can't hear you. He says, be careful. Big Brother is watching and listening. Facebook has become very censored. You can't say what you think is the truth. Yeah, I noticed that social media in general took a massive path to censorship, especially in the last few weeks of the elections in the US. And we knew this would happen. People like Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg. Clearly, they switched on certain systems and switched others off during the election. So I'm not surprised.
Right.
Really irritates me. This is why we've got to find our own platforms. I'm you know, like I had to build this platform for us to be able to have honest, open conversations. And these days, you're not going to get that on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter for long. I'm telling you now, alternative viewpoints on those, you're going to be branded a conspiracy theorist. You're going to be called fake news. When you talk about China in a way that they don't like, they're going to shut you down. So you've got to start your own. We've got to find new ways to communicate. And I'm very, very serious about that. We all need to find new ways to communicate. There's a great platform called Parler, Parler, which I'm thinking very seriously about joining because Parler is not censored. Well, it's like Twitter, but it's just it's an alternative platform. And if we can get enough traction there on Parler, then maybe that's the place where we can finally have conversations that matter. Parler, free speech social network is what it's called. You can speak freely and express yourself openly without fear of being deplatformed for your views. You get to engage with real people, not bots. Parler is people and privacy focused and gives you the tools that you need to create and curate your Parler experience. They've got a higher ethical standard. They have citizen verification so that you can't get on if you're a bot. And you can have real conversations with people. So I'm thinking of joining there, and that's what I'm in for.
The shitty thing with this is it still doesn't change the entire communication the entire communication ecosystem or the culture and times that we're living in. So it's all good and well that there's this platform where you can say what you want to say without your fear of being deplatformed. But all it takes is one spiteful colleague or your manager who thinks, no, they need to put things together to screenshot what you say, to justify in your company why this is bad. And then you've now lost your job again. Or you now still... Times Live writes about it, and then you're still a viral thing anyway, because that's not a personal example at all.
But we know that happens, right? We know that happens. Yeah. Jesus.
Not much. Anyways, speaking of other murky waters, excuse the pun, you'll get why when I mention this. It's not really a conspiracy theory when there are images to now speak to this, but there are new satellite images that have been taken from above North Korean military facilities that suggest the fact that North Korea is now using and training dolphins for some sort of military activities. Now, they were only just released a couple of days ago, but this is what the United States Naval Institute has been sitting on for the past 5 years, because some of these images date back to October 2015.
Yeah.
And they track that there are just a suspicious amount of pods of dolphins at military bases in North Korea. And they go, what have they been using these for? But if you actually do your research, the likes of marine mammals being used in military programs isn't that far off.
No.
There have been quite a couple of cases all over the world where animals are used for military, and specifically dolphins, since they're quite smart, have been used to locate objects such as mines in water, for example.
It sounds so, but it sounds so James Bond, you know, like the villain has a school of dolphins that he's trained to assassinate people. I mean, it's very, and Kim Jong-un is such a strange human being, and North Korea is so mysterious that it all kind of adds up to this very weird situation that could only be a North Korean story. So what, they're training dolphins for military purposes?
Yes.
Jesus.
No. Look, it's sick and twisted, but it's so funny. It's not funny. There's nothing funny about it. But, you know, dolphins are so lovable, yeah, and they love being around humans. Now they are taught to, like, hey, focus, yeah, attack.
Can you imagine?
And then we, like, it's also extra suspicious because if you dial it back to 2012, mm-hmm, Kim Jong-un launched this dolphinarium, they're calling it, back in the center of the capital city of North Korea back in 2012. And yeah, it seemed like a very innocent thing, right? It's like, right, oh my gosh, well, Kim Jong-un just cares about the animals, launching this dolphinarium, clearly, you know.
Yeah.
Wow, he's trying to save the animals.
He's trying to save the animals. He's doing a good thing. This is what he does. He's a great leader. That's what it is. It's terrific.
2012 could have been the year that the seed was planted to see exactly what these dolphins can do. Cut to 3 years later, there was the first image of dolphins at the military bases.
Yeah, I'm starting to get very worried about this stuff. Anthony, what's up, man?
Hey, man, I'm calling from the free speech zone of Perth in Australia.
How's that going?
Well, we have free speech on the ground over here, but on Facebook, where we're interacting with people, mm-hmm, I'm finding, mates, that are just closing everybody who's any pro, middle of the road to the right, is just getting their doors slammed in their face.
Absolutely.
The feeds are just absolute shit. It's fucking ridiculous that we're actually busy in.
Anthony, I think we lost you. Damn. See, they're even managing to cut him off here. Because it's obviously he called us on like WhatsApp or something. and they managed to find it. Oh, dude, I'm sorry. That was just getting interesting. But yes, you see, we can't even have a conversation about this stuff. Because some fact checker is going to arrive on the scene. And listen, most of these fact checkers, as I said the other morning, are left-wing organizations. They're paid for, they're financed, they're ideologically aligned with the left. They're not interested in hearing opinions that don't fit their narrative. I mean, you know, if Donald Trump leaves office, let's say Joe Biden becomes the president, because that's what's likely to happen, the states certify him, and Donald Trump quietly and politely leaves office, as presidents have for hundreds of years, then their whole story, mm-hmm, collapses in on itself, because they've been telling us for months already that Donald Trump's not going to leave unless he's escorted out by a, you know, Secret Service, and it's going to be a coup attempt. I mean, you can still see it in the news. People are talking about a coup attempt. Smart people. And if that doesn't happen, I'm sorry, but the media's credibility has to go down the toilet with Donald Trump. They all must be punished. They must be punished for lying to people and for ratcheting up tension in ways that they cannot dial it back. And now, when a final accounting is done around the media and their role not only in COVID, but also in influencing elections and making elections less free and fair than they should be, the media should be held accountable for that. We should dismantle all of these big media organizations. People should be forced to, or not forced, but people should be allowed to find alternate sources of media. Because unfortunately, if you only watch mainstream media and you only listen to mainstream radio and that kind of thing, you're never going to know that there are things going on in the world that are actually kind of important. The Uyghurs in China who are being persecuted by the Chinese government. The alternate points of view on COVID. Perhaps the fact that that what was predicted for this election is totally not what's happened. And the media were behind that. Someone's got to be like added up at the end and counted and held accountable for what they haven't and have got wrong. I'm terribly sorry. Ruth says, that just gets my blood boiling. Watch The Cove and Blackfish. Yes, the Cove is that terrible documentary about the murder of all of those dolphins. I can't watch that. I'm sorry, Ruth. I know that I should, but I can't watch that stuff. Just it kills me. It depresses me so much. Can't see.
It's no surprise, but already with these images being released, some animal rights organizations are trying to get involved in helping these dolphins. But first, before you even try to help, you need to establish what is happening.
Yeah, exactly. Well, somebody says here that they started to laugh. Jeremy says he started to laugh when Sia said, "It's not a conspiracy theory. There are pictures." Yeah.
I'm not saying there might be dolphins there. No, there are actual pictures that say there are dolphins there. What they're being used for, that verdict is still out.
Yeah, some people are also weaning themselves off of WhatsApp and converting to Telegram. People are also going to mewe.com. Because Facebook, according to, who's this here? Let me give credit. Lola, she says, Facebook can go and eat shit. The alternatives are there already. You just need to look for them. I'm weaning myself off of WhatsApp and converting to Telegram. Most people feel like we do. It's just a matter of time. Well, you can see that. That's happening all over the world. Facebook and Jack Dorsey and Alphabet are doing what is called manufacturing consent. And they're very effective. Parler is never going to hit the same levels of reach. It's already taking on fringy characteristics. That's from Tobile. Yes, that's true. But I mean, I don't feel that I need to be on those platforms anymore. Speaking of neighborly delinquents, whatever happened to Grace? Oh. We were talking about Malawi earlier and the Bushiris. Whatever happened to Grace Mugabe and her extension cord whipping case? She also hoofed it across the border and wasn't extradited to appear in court.
Oh, right.
No, she wasn't. But I think, wasn't it AfriForum and Harry Nell who were taking on that case?
I actually forgot. There was a model, and the model was hit, and it all happened in a sense, an apartment with the sons. I've forgotten.
There are a lot of people who've escaped the country, hey? Omar al-Bashir, AJ Gupta, Rajesh Gupta, and Atul Gupta, Mary and Shepard Bushiri, Nana Poku, Tim Omotoso, Grace Mugabe, Alf Lacau, all of these people have skipped the border and we've never got them back. And of course, the substitutes are Gavin Watson and Sam Chabalala. But, you know,
I think none of these people are being shipped out in a cardboard box that's inconspicuous and they just have one tiny hole to breathe. Absolutely not. These people are comfortably being driven out, being flown out, which just speaks to when you have power.
Yeah. You know, it's just very interesting. Like here's, for example, this is somebody, let me just see if I can find a name. I'm going to say anonymous, but they've got an idea for a present for Mbulelo. VO5 men 13-in-1 shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, mouthwash, deodorant, peanut butter, and Gatorade all in one.
Ew.
With Mbulelo on his idea of money and the corruption, he must also take responsibility. Sadly, there are thousands of Bushiris in South Africa. There are. There really are. So that's a very good point being raised by somebody on our WhatsApp group this morning. I'm not getting married in December, but I'm getting divorced. Oh, wow. Okay. Good for you, Sean. Ooh. Sean's getting divorced in December. Exciting times. Shreyan Devani also murdered his bride and then fled to the UK. Remember him? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another guy to talk about. So lots of escapees that we need to take control of at some point. I see also that there's an update on the Mars simulation that they've been doing, because apparently for these scientists who back in 2015 went into the simulation, They went in for a year to see if they could survive the real thing one day. And now we've all done a bit of Mars training, thanks to lockdown. These guys went into a simulation of living on Mars for a year. So their family didn't hear from them. They didn't talk to anyone else. They were living in the conditions that they suppose it would be like on Mars. And we've now got some idea of how that must have been for them, because all of us have had a year like that.
So firstly, can we actually just commend them on their commitment? Is there anything that you're so committed to in your life that you can devote so many years for?
No way.
These people back in 2015 were still very much wanting to be the first crop of people who live on Mars, or at least experiment living on there. They signed up for this. We still don't even know when they could possibly be going up to Mars. But it was back in 2015 when they signed up for this program to live in a simulation of what it would be like to live on Mars. And we now know this since it was taped, and all of their tape has now been put together into a documentary. It's available online, actually. So if you visit docnyc.net, so that it stands for the DOCNYC Film Festival. It's now available on there. And the documentary is called Red Heaven. So it follows the lives of these six volunteers who quarantined back in 2015 in this small habitat for a whole year in order to simulate living conditions on Mars. And it's funny to see how similar themes that we've experienced just being at home in our normal lives with our family are the similar issues that they have as well. So it's not like exactly the fact that they can't breathe or whatnot. No, it's just they're getting on each other's nerves and someone is playing music a little too loudly there and they're discussing what will they eat for dinner. It's those sort of issues. So this whole experiment was sponsored by NASA, and they built this dome in Hawaii, a remote rocky part of Hawaii that's 8,000 feet above sea levels and miles away from civilization as well. That's a bit close to what life in Mars would be like in terms of the climate as well. From August 2015, these six scientists all lived together. And I just don't know if I would actually have the commitment to see the year through, to go like, this isn't the real thing. Actually, I'm done with having to hear John play Slipknot every single morning. Cheers, I'm leaving.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would never be able to devote myself to being stuck away in a place for one whole year away from everybody else, simulating Mars. I don't care how much it's tied to the future of the human race. Someone else can do that. Not for me. I wouldn't survive. No way.
Right. There wasn't much groundbreaking work that was done in terms of scientific knowledge gained from a project like this, because those bases were largely covered. It was more about the psychological effect of people living together isolated for so long to see if there should be any changes done to their plans for Mars. So really, is six even an ideal number? Who is needed? Should they be separated? Should it rather be three sets of couples? And from something like this, you see how humans in general just don't get along together. I started thinking about a concept like Big Brother and how already 30 days in one house gets so much drama from people. Now a year?
It's not entertainment. I'm sorry. Here's a story. Yeah. Here's a story that I find pretty disturbing. Rita Panahi is someone I follow on social media, and she's just retweeted a story from the Herald Sun in Australia, so we have every reason to believe this is true. A man, and there's a picture of him. He is squint, and his glasses are at an angle, and he's a white dude, probably in his 50s, maybe even in his early 60s. He has just pled guilty to stealing his neighbor's dog and having sex with it. And he's been jailed previously for similar offenses. He's going to be sentenced on Friday. You know, there are some really weird people in the world. I'm going to send you this picture. We should really put it up on our website as well. It's just the most, you could see this. He's 53 years old. Okay. So listen to this. The court heard police found pornography playing on a television when they entered his caravan. He lived in a caravan.
He lives in a caravan.
Yeah. Near Shepparton County in Victoria on April the 7th this year. The 12-year-old Kelpie Cross dog called Gemma inside was visibly distressed and was taken to the vet. Prosecutor Stephen Devlin said police were called after the dog went missing on April the 6th. The owner, a farmer, recalled seeing Walton's car on the property earlier that day. He pleaded guilty to theft of the dog, bestiality, and possessing a drug of dependence relating to cannabis found in the caravan when police arrived.
Cannabis is a drug of dependence?
Yeah. The dog is friendly. Listen to this. This is so sick. The dog is friendly and would go to any person, and the dog is familiar with the accused from his past visits to the property when he came fishing. When police arrived, his clothes were covered in what appeared to be dog hair. Oh, my God. When police asked questions, the judge, apparently, Judge Trevor Raitt, said on Monday, Walton had only been out of jail for a few months after a sentence for similar offences involving dogs. He's done this before. The defence lawyer, imagine having that job. Imagine you're the defence lawyer for a dude who's accused of bestiality. I mean, talk about having a tough job.
For the second time.
Yeah. Now you have to go and argue on behalf of this fucking maniac. So listen to this. The defense lawyer said his actions had not made him a popular. He's not a popular man. And he had been bashed, taunted, and called a dog fucker. And he'd been spat on in prison. Oh, you don't say. He is vilified in his community and he's vilified in jail. Well, there might be a reason for that. Just saying. Unfortunately for the community and for him, he was liberated without any support. Part of his reoffending was due to a lack of rehabilitation programs available to him. How do you rehabilitate someone who fucks dogs? Where do you start with that? Where do you begin with someone like that? I'm terribly sorry, but this is really, really not someone who seems to me could be rehabilitated. Forgive me if that sounds unkind and merciless, but there's just no way, right? He had an unremarkable childhood and had been a loner for the whole of his life. Of course, the judge said it was very serious cruelty to an animal. He's going to be sentenced on Friday. But really, there's nowhere else this guy can go, surely, right? Jesus, what a story. I'm gonna send you this picture. Ugh. Yeah?
Thank you for your great retelling, but what do his squint eyes have to do with his actions?
Well, see, I believe that
or
that is...
Or you just painting the picture.
I believe his squint eyes have a role to play. That's all I'm going to say. Just take a look at that. Have you seen the picture?
No, I haven't.
Okay, let me see if I can put it up here. Hang on. Let me just see. I'm going
to... Yeah, because I'm even scared to Google that story. I don't want to, you know... I already have it. China looking at my
All right, let me find you. Let me show you this picture. What a great-looking human being this guy is. His name is Paul Walton. All right, hang on.
Okay.
Yeah, are you ready?
Oh, no.
Here he is. This is Paul Walton, guy who has sex with dogs, and he's squint as hell. Ugh. What a monster. Just, it boggles my mind that there are people who are doing this in the world, and that there are people out there who think that they can be rehabilitated. You know, look at this.
Oh,
there it is. Hang on, take a look at this guy. Here he is.
Oh, see
this dude. He's got his glasses are at an angle. He's very squint. He's kind of smiling a little bit. What a nutcase.
Nutcase. Firstly, those glasses do say 70s.
Yeah, those glasses. Cream. Listen, those kind of glasses are especially well known as sex offender glasses. So that's all I'm saying.
And that and jersey that he's wearing screams Bill Cosby.
Yeah, it's a Bill Cosby type jersey. And he's standing next to a banner which has got like a pirate symbol on it and it says, "Surrender the booty." You can't make this up. You can't make this up, right? What a story.
I don't want to.
Honestly, that's just awful.
See, I'm not taking any, I'm not trying to say he's innocent at all, but this is what happens from, you know, when you're in the shit, they'll find anything to substantiate.
Sure.
That was probably an innocent Halloween party that he went to years ago, but now that all of these things will get uncovered, I'm certain if somehow I ended up killing someone one day, heaven forbid, they'll find pictures of me at a restaurant with a knife in my hand going,
yes.
See,
and they'll
already show the signs.
They'll use that picture, but surrender the booty is my favorite part of that picture. Jesus. Really? What a nutcase. Anyway, Stephen says that he is the result, that guy is the result of marrying your cousin. And
No.
Annette says she bets that he drives an ice cream van. Mm-hmm. And Andre says, why do pedophiles and molesters in general always wear those glasses? What the actual fuck? Typical interfamilial crossbreeding. Yeah.
That's could be like a general symbol. You know, Christians might have a rosary or something. Yeah. Pedophiles might have those glasses.
Maybe that's how they recognize each other. Hey, see you.
Gareth, we have to quickly go to blind history. But do I remind you now of what you want to talk about? Or should I remind you tomorrow?
We'll have to do it tomorrow. Sorry, there's no time. Okay. I'm sorry there isn't time. Now, I love this episode of Blind History because this is somebody that I was completely oblivious to, and she has become one of my favorite people, I'd say in my top 10 of all the people, all the people that we've covered in Blind History. And thanks very much to one of our listeners, Robin, who actually alerted me to her. Her name is Wu Zetian, and she was a great empress who ruled over a cosmopolitan and rich empire in China. There were skyscrapers built, palaces, giant statues. She ruled for half a century. And it's not a fairy tale. It's absolutely true. There is unbelievable detail and depth to this story. The emperor, who was a woman, the only woman who ruled in China, and she ruled a millennium and a half ago. You need to hear this. This is a terrific episode of Blind History. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters, and my co-host, as always, for these shows is Anthony Medera. Taizong had a very wild horse whom no one could master. I was then a palace girl, and standing by his side, I said, I can control him, but I shall need three things first. An iron whip, an iron mace, and a dagger. If the iron whip does not bring him to obedience, then I will use the iron mace to beat his head. And if that does not do it, I will use the dagger and cut his throat. Taizong understood my meaning. So I'm embarrassed to say this because I've said it before, but when I research some of these people that we've decided to cover in Blind History, and really, I mean, the list is endless, so I suppose I shouldn't feel bad, but I always think I'm so ignorant and ill-informed, and when it comes to someone as important as this, I really feel that way. Her name was Wu Zetian, or Wu Zhao, and I knew absolutely nothing about her, and she's, without any shred of doubt, she's climbed into the top 10 of my most favorite people in all of history. This is a brand new episode of Blind History. Anthony Medera and I, and you, to talk about some of the most interesting people from the past. There are always lessons to be learned. What makes this episode so special is that actually this was a suggestion by Helen, who listens to the show. So thank you, Helen. First and foremost, Ant, this is quite easily one of the most formidable people. Whether she was a woman or if she'd been a man, she'd still be in the top 10 for me of all time. And what she did in her time was absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, it was incredible to actually study Wu Zetian. So I really, really enjoyed it. And where I first came across her was Robert Greene's written quite a few books. And this particular one was Art of Seduction. And she had that art down pat. And that's when I started getting interested. Who is this lady? And so I did do a bit of studying behind the scenes on that.
Wu Zetian was essentially around in the 600s AD. That's an enormously long time ago. And the kinds of things that were achieved in her reign were exceptional, not only, again, because she was the only woman in 2,000 years of Chinese imperial history to have the kind of power that she had, but also because there are still buildings that she lived and worked in and worshipped in. There are still monuments, and her grave lies undisturbed in a province of China where there's a long sacred road that you walk along, and it's just a pillar, uninscribed. Most Chinese emperors wanted an epitaph, and we know of many other great leaders who we've on various episodes of Blind History referred to and who wanted very specifically a history of their reign recorded. She was happy to let those who came afterwards describe her. And many people have said that the very best description of her is to actually leave it blank, because she broke labels. She destroyed old patriarchies and hierarchies. She did things that were so tremendously transformative at that time in China that her memory actually deserves a blank piece of paper. I mean, people have tried to write a history of her since then, but she actually wanted that pillar built, and she put nothing on it except her name and said, "You guys write the history." And man, did people come up with some convoluted stories about her once she was gone.
And the big thing is that the emperors that came after her wanted to banish any memory of her. And especially because she started her own dynasty. So it started with her and it ended with her. And then it went back to the Tang dynasty. So they just wanted to rub that out as if it never happened. So that's why the inscriptions, it was blank.
So she started off, and you mentioned seduction, she started off life as a, you know, an unremarkable, ordinary young girl, and was, because of her beauty and her charm, recruited into the household of the emperor at the time and became a concubine, but one of many. I mean, these emperors had, you know, hundreds of concubines, and she was just one of them. So it must have been an aspect of her personality or her incredible beauty or her general sophistication that she managed to get his attention and raise herself to the level where she wasn't an equal to all the other concubines anymore.
So her dad really was fundamental to the then emperor, maybe in a smaller way, but he owed him. And so I think that was also where it played out. But her dad saw that she was different to the rest of his children. And she was intelligent. She questioned a lot of things. She questioned her dad. So her dad thought, there's no place for her in this family. She's going to question everything. He couldn't find a suitor for her at that particular age that she went to become a concubine with the emperor. He couldn't find a tutor that would put up with this type of character, because it was so foreign in those days. Usually they would darn or knit or whatever they did in those days, but she was not interested in that at all, and she was very, very intelligent. That was one of the reasons also why she went to the emperor.
So it was interesting. She was a concubine of an emperor called Taizong, but after his death, she actually married his successor, which was his ninth son, the emperor Gaozong, and became his consort and took the title of empress consort, reigning as his main consort from then on. And she had considerable political power already, but that grew and grew. And he had a stroke, as I understand it.
Correct, yes, he had a stroke, yeah.
And therefore was incapacitated for most of his reign, and she ran things.
Yeah, that suited her perfectly. there was talk. And only the real sort of truth is coming out now, but that she poisoned him. But ultimately then, yes, he did have a stroke. He was a weak man compared to his dad. And she had an incredible relationship with his dad. There's now stories coming out that although she was a concubine, they never slept together. And she ended up being his secretary. He didn't trust a lot of his people to get the right message out to the people. And so she did that for him. And during that time, she met the son, who became Gaozong, and she was very strategic. So there's rumors that they were having an affair while the dad was still alive, while he was sick.
So if historians were asked 100 years ago about her, they would have said she was a terrible woman. She was like a tempestuous, dangerous break with tradition, that she wasn't really regarded in Chinese history as being this incredible person. But they've discovered things recently that rewrite that history a little bit. And they've discovered amazing, amazing things about her capital city, which was a million people big. There were a million people inside the walls and a million out. That it was the most cosmopolitan place in the whole world at that stage. There were buildings that were essentially like the skyscrapers of that time. There's a famous pagoda in China, which is dedicated to Buddhism, which was her preferred religion. And Buddhism was also her way of connecting to her people, which was interesting and, again, strategic. But really, this woman didn't have the easiest time post her death in terms of her reputation. And she has been tarnished by what you can only call a Confucian patriarchy that was there Correct. Before and that was thereafter. The male aristocracy of China never liked the idea that she was as good as she actually was. And luckily, because the Chinese have kept such excellent records and they've preserved their history, which is so much to their credit, we can now discover things about her that we didn't know before.
Mm. She took it from a military regime to a scholaristic regime. Mm. And what she did was incredible. And she brought people in that were actually good at the job. I mean, there's so many lessons we can learn now in that you don't get appointed, but you can actually do the job.
Well, she even had the audacity to appoint a female prime minister whose grave was obviously destroyed by succeeding generations in an attempt to smear her reputation as well. But she seems to have been an incredibly efficient administrator too. Empress Wu, during her long reign, it was over 50 years, had managed not only to expand the frontiers of the empire non-militarily, she managed to protect the Silk Road, which was their most important trade route with Europe. And if you look at some of the inscriptions and some of the murals that they found, they actually show foreign diplomats from as far as Rome who'd come to see her, Koreans, Iranians. Mm. They've actually got a headdress that was found on the skeleton of one of her great-granddaughters. And this headdress is called the Phoenix Crown. This thing is the most intricately made piece of jewelry that you could possibly imagine in the year 690 or somewhere thereabouts. And she did things like make sure that her soldiers and her people were always fed, even though there were droughts. She built these enormous rice granaries, which you can still go and visit in China now. And it's remarkable to think about this, especially in the context of her time, because Europe at that time was a disaster.
Mm.
I mean, you had the Dark Ages.
It was the Dark Ages, correct.
The ancient world had collapsed in on itself. Europe was just a bunch of feudal tribes.
Barbarians, as they call them. Yeah.
They were warring against each other the whole time. And here was this sophisticated civilization, this extraordinary cosmopolitan civilization in China.
But she knew very well that it started and stopped with her, because if we look at it, the minute she died, she knew it was over, or the minute that another emperor came in that she didn't have control over, she'd lose control. So she had to make sure during her tenure, whatever way, and you can see during her life how she did it, she had to make sure that she kept control. So she wasn't building a legacy. She knew she couldn't build a legacy. And that's where a lot of people are very hard on her, but it's nothing that any other emperor would have done. Kaizong killed his two brothers.
Wow.
So she had to perform certain things to ensure that she stayed in power, either through the weak Kaizong, which it was a blessing for her to build up her experience. And then afterwards with her two sons, she got rid of them very, very quickly. And
yeah,
then,
I mean, she actually, there's an interesting story about the end of her life where she went up to Mount Song and she threw down a golden tablet with all her sins written on them in a kind of confession. And this blows my mind. They found this gold tablet with her confession written on it. And she clearly had a conscience that bothered her towards the end of her life. But then anyone who wants to hold on to power and can administer an entire empire the way she did has to have done some bad things in their lives.
Of course, 100%.
So you talk about...
And they focused on it. You know, the history focused on it until now as it starts coming out.
Well, the other thing that we do have from her, and you mentioned the word building an empire. She was a great builder. I mean, her palace was apparently 20 times the size of the Acropolis. And remember, this is at an early stage in civilization. She built the famous giant wild goose pagoda, which is still there. In fact, there are three floors above the floors that you can see now that came down during an earthquake subsequent to her reign. But this was probably the tallest building in the world at the time. And she excavated a great cave at a famous religious Buddhist site along the river. There are these famous caves that were considered sacred. And hers is actually made in her honor. The Buddha itself has her face sculpted into it, which is magnificent. She built these granaries we've already spoken of. She expanded her capital city.
And what you mentioned, Gareth, is Buddhism. So they had Confucianism. That's what was practiced, and also a bit of Taoism.
Yes.
But she brought Buddhism into it. So it was the new contemporary, new religion or spirituality that that came in, and she actually brought it to China.
Well, what was so interesting about that is that she realized it was popular with her people already, almost like Constantine realized that Christianity was growing in his people's imagination, and he took on Christianity as a political move, and she was already a Buddhist, so it was easy for her to do this. But it did weld her much closer to her people than if she had just been an empress who was distant. You know, she ordered that there was a Buddhist temple to be built in every town in the empire. Again, these are the kinds of things that you don't get to do unless you're extremely powerful and you manage every detail of what happens in your kingdom.
But if I look at her, just to step back a little bit, and her rise to power, if you can call it that, as we mentioned, she was with Kaizong. And then when he died, what was the custom then was that all his concubines had to be sent to monasteries, cut their hair, and they're going to be sent to monasteries for the rest of their lives. And this is actually what happened with Wu. But because she had a relationship with Kaizong, and or Kaizong's wife, the empress, saw that he really loved this concubine, so she thought she should bring him back. So she brought Wu back in. But when Wu came in, the empress started to see, hang on, he's now all over Wu. He only has eyes for Wu. So the story comes out, did the empress kill Kaizong's daughter with Wu, or did Wu kill her own daughter to become empress? And that was a story that's banded about. Nobody knows. But what ultimately happened was the emperor believed her. Wu was made empress to be his wife. And then when she was empress, she organized that they be executed. And then once again, there's stories about cutting off feet and hands and throwing them into a brewery vat. Those are the stories that come through. But this lady had her own dynasty.
Yeah.
She was an empress that had her own dynasty. So I think they did a lot in the centuries that followed to ruin her name.
Well, I mean, Anne Paladin, who's a famous historian, said that Wu Zetian was an extraordinary woman, attractive, exceptionally gifted, politically astute, and an excellent judge of men. With single-minded determination, she overcame the opposition of the Confucian establishment through her own efforts, unique among palace women, by not using her own family. Her rise to power was, however, steeped in blood. And it was interesting that during her reign, women in China were able for the first time to decide whether or not they wanted to be married to a man. They could divorce the man themselves without any permission from any of the men. Their rights were expanded. They were allowed to be entrepreneurs. She encouraged and fostered female businesses. And she seems to have been very well respected during her reign by men and by women.
She was loved. She was actually very popular and beloved monarch at the time. And you know, we talk about people that are ahead of their time. I mean, she was thousands of years before her time.
Well, if you consider that, you know, Elizabeth I, who we've dealt with in one of our episodes, was 900 years later than her. It makes her achievements all the more remarkable.
Yeah. There is talk of Boudicca, the English queen, or the Celtic. Yes,
ancient Britain.
Who went out to single-handedly take on the Roman might. And that was sort of one of the first powerful females at the time. And they talk a lot about some synergies, except Wu did it in a different way. She was very much non-aggressive. It was precarious for her. She knew that she had to do everything. She had to be so careful to survive. It was a man's world at the time.
It's unbelievable that that so much of her reign is still extant. I mean, there are buildings that you can go and visit in China that she used and that she built, and they're still standing. And again, this is the kind of thing that gives me chills. But I'm always amazed at where nations protect and preserve their history rather than destroying it. And in spite of the fact that the generations that succeeded her were so opposed to her having a good reputation, and even though much was probably destroyed, there are still so many surviving examples of the architecture, the writing, the history, the detail of her reign, that if you were a historian some 1,500 years later, it is possible for you to go and witness firsthand things that empress might have seen.
Yeah, and unpacked exactly who she was.
Yeah.
And which is starting to come out more and more now. And as you mentioned right in the beginning, the Silk Road, which was fundamental to trade, the West needed so much from the East, and I suppose vice versa. And she managed to open it up again because it was raided by nomads and people were killed if they even tried to go on it. So she settled that down. She was very diplomatic. so she didn't have a lot of wars, which was unusual, because emperors, they first and foremost were military leaders, and then they would maybe have some skill in administration. But she would rather look at diplomacy and spies, et cetera, et cetera. And she took what is modern Korea, she expanded the empire as well in a different way. But she was forced to abdicate in a way, just finally.
Well, she was in her 80s.
And that's another thing that you have to honor her for. It seemed like she had a high sex drive. You know, and the people used to be upset because she had hundreds of men concubines. And they were upset, but what was the difference, really? And then she would say, when they asked her, she said, England kings have many concubines. So she developed a deep relationship with young brothers who apparently they were singers or whatever it might be. They were called the Zhang brothers, and it caused a lot of scandal in court. And she realized her time was up, and what they expected was her to continue the Zhao dynasty. But she didn't. She brought back the Tang dynasty, which was actually probably the right thing to do at the time. And then she brought out of exile her son, which became Emperor Zongdong, and he was useless, like his dad. But the grandson was very good. So that was the greatest. Actually, the Tang dynasty is one of the greatest in terms of expansion and growth, in terms of scholastic growth, learnings, art. And she started that.
Now, a remarkable woman. There's no shortage in history of great men and women, but this woman is just right up there with the very best of them. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
She had this copper box, and the copper box would be, what are the people thinking about?
Oh, wow.
And so people used to write letters and put them in there.
Oh, so it was almost like the suggestion boxes.
That's exactly. It was a suggestion box.
And that's how she would find out what was going on.
Exactly.
Wow. CliffCentral.com